As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
I'm sorry, you can sit there and look and play with all your silly machines as much as you like.
Is Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
Himself 6 feet into the crowd and kung fu kicked a supporter who was without a shadow of a doubt giving him lip.
Oh, I say, it's amazing.
He does it tame and tame and tame again.
Crank up the music, charge your glass. This nation is going to dance all night.
The Rolls Royce of boilers. A rare venture into Ray Hudson's world. The first and last edition of the Gary Weaver Challenge. Premier League centre-backs being name-checked on Frazier 29 years before they arrived. A match of the day commentator bites back at the cliches pod. A classy touch from Alan Kirbishley. The Who Wants to Be a Millionaire scandal you hadn't heard about. The state of North Korean football journalism. And Erik ten Hag reaches a very important milestone at Manchester United. Brought to your ears by The Athletic. This is Football Cliches. Hello everyone and welcome to episode 234 of Football Cliches. I'm Adam Hurry and with me on the adjudication panel today is Charlie Eccleshare. How is it going?
It's going well, Adam. How about you?
Pretty good, actually. Delighted also to be joined by David Walker, as always. How's it going?
Very well.
Excellent. We're all set then. Do you know what? This first item, I didn't deem to be worthy of adjudication panel status, so let's do it first. I don't know where we're supposed to go with this. I don't know where anybody is supposed to go with this, but Bolton Wanderers have announced their new stadium naming rights deal with Bolton-based building product manufacturer Tough Sheet. From the 1st of July, the stadium will be renamed the Tough Sheet Community Stadium. Dave, there's only one joke that anybody can make about this.
And isn't Jeff Stelling going to relish that opportunity? First time he gets to throw to someone at the Tough Sheet Stadium? It's either one of two things. They've ever called that company that for that reason, because they find it funny and it's maybe a way of people remembering them. Or they sort of did it without thinking but stuck with it and are just sick of people making the joke.
I actually hope it's the latter, Charlie, because naming your company like that is something that should only be done by a business that has the scale of like one bloke and a van. And then people drive past going, oh, that's good.
Nice.
That's it. But you can't have a company of any scale, certainly not one that could conceivably sponsor a club the size of Bolton.
So you think maybe just their success ran away with them and they thought this is never going to be, we're never going to have to worry about it. And then it was just, it just caught fire for whatever reason. Or they were like, it's just a really great name. We don't, and we want to go with that. And even if that people find that titillating and amusing, that's up to them.
Overall though, Dave, it's just such a fall from grace. The Reebok. Good old Reebok. The Reebok.
It's had a few, isn't it? Since it was the Macron for a while. It was the University of Bolton Stadium. I mean, I think in general, EFL stadium names are so far through the looking glass. It is a complete and utter Wild West if you go down through them. Like almost every single stadium, certainly, even it feels like the lower you go, the more actually the more it, yeah. I don't know what is. Maybe the top championship clubs still retain a sense of prestige.
Yeah,
it's mad if you, because when you watch Soccer Saturday, because they have to play by the rules. Mm. They can't call it what it's colloquially known as. Mm. It takes you a little while sometimes to work out where they are.
I remember, reeling a few years ago from Pride Park having been renamed. It was the iPro. I don't know if it's still the iPro.
Don't think so.
In a way, with sponsors, it's surprising it doesn't happen more often given the sort of fleeting success of a lot of companies. But I can't think at Premier League level of a current Premier League stadium. I know the Reebok was, but I can't think of a Premier League stadium, the sponsor chain, like you think like the Emirates, the Etihad.
Vitality?
But they didn't change name. They haven't gone to a different sponsor, have they?
Yeah, like, yeah. That's it's too Bob, isn't it?
Yeah, very
almost literally too Bob, because it's obviously it's the easiest little bit of money that a club can get, which is just to sell off the naming rights. It's no skin off anybody's nose. But everyone else is going to have fun with it, and I thought we should join in too. But it's time for the official adjudication panel. Quick one for you though. AJ writes in, Dave, my dad had a new boiler fitted in. And the engineer who installed it said it was the Rolls-Royce of boilers. This is a really good, solid Rolls-Royce-ing. And particularly, you're going to feel reassured. This is the one thing in your life you want to be like a Rolls-Royce, other than a Rolls-Royce.
You want some quality engineering involved, don't you?
Yeah, right. You want it to purr.
Well, this is it. It's more like Dave going very literal. He's talking about the actual structure of the boiler. But Charlie, when you fire, you know, when you turn that thermostat, you just... give it a couple of seconds and you wait for the boiler to fire up. That's a potentially Rolls-Royce moment.
Yeah.
Like a midfielder moving through the gears.
That is a lovely feeling.
Yeah.
Because there's always that slight, you think, oh, if this doesn't work, it's going to be extremely annoying. Mm. And it does. And to have that trust, like with a Rolls-Royce, that must be lovely.
And a boiler would work quite nicely as well. You could put a little figurine on top of the boiler as well, like you have on the bonnet,
the logo,
of the Rolls Royce. Yeah, you know, like their little thing on the front of the car. It's like a little
statuette.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
Yeah, it could be. Now I think about it, Jude Bellingham, who is the current leader of Rolls Royce midfielders in the world, Bellingham could be a boiler manufacturer. Yeah, I've just got a new one. What'd you get? I've got Bellingham. They are very reliable, the Bellingham.
Well, especially, wasn't that the Ray Winston Bellingham sort of... I can imagine that said in it. That gives it a bit more weight.
Yeah, he'd be doing an advert for boilers.
Yeah, he could be doing that. Like back in the day, he could have done a radio ad for Bellingham.
Next up, I'm pretty sure that we've resisted for 233 episodes the temptation to delve into the world of Ray Hudson, the co-commentator across the pond.
He does feature in my book.
Yeah.
Yes, we hadn't spoken about him because I was sort of unaware.
This does jog my memory. Maybe we have done Ray Hudson before, but this is a glancing, fleeting visit to Ray Hudson world. This came from Jem Bassata, who was watching Dortmund versus Chelsea on CBS, I believe. Play this clip. This is João Félix just curling a shot just over the bar. Now, there'll be a point of this clip where you think that's where it's going, but trust me, there's more.
A wonderful gift from himself. Started out nicely, gets it pulled back. He's got time, he's got space, and usually you could... put your beating heart on him, hitting this where the spiders live, in that top corner, but you'd be dead.
Incredible comic timing at the end there. You couldn't do it better. You really
That's
couldn't.
Brilliant. I mean, listeners should check him out. This guy, like some of his Messi work in particular, he's obsessed with Messi, as many are. And he, if you think Drury can be a bit OTT, Hudson is like Drury on steroids. I mean, he is just like absolutely going for it.
Absolutely. That's why we've never really done him before, right? I think he's one of the most suggested... I always see people suggesting Ray Hudson stuff, but it's like... What can you add to that? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It transcends cliches. I mean, I know we delve outside of our remit quite a lot, Dave, but Ray Hudson, he's unpoliceable, I think. And that's probably quite right.
He is, but also he's sort of... because he's in the States... he kind of will probably get discovered randomly now and again, as if people, and people will think, oh, this bloke, are you not aware of this guy? And, you know, he's just been doing, he's got his own sort of shtick that he's been doing for a long time.
Yeah.
And it's, as we've just heard, it's great. Like, he does it very well, but.
You'd be dead. That's amazing.
You'd be dead. More straightforward affair for us now. This came from Ben Mouncer. Norwich City, little match update as they were playing Wigan, I believe, at the weekend. A wonderful play along the end line from O'Neill Hernandez, but the cross doesn't find a City player. What possible justification, Dave, could there be for using the word end line? Maybe they just didn't. I mean, there aren't that many. There aren't many sort of mainstream words that you can immediately call upon here. Byline just feels weird to me. But byline's okay. I mean, that's what you want. But end line's absurd.
Yeah, you can't say goal line.
Yeah, I mean, goal line is a tricky one because I know because in theory the goal line can extend past the post and you can use it, but then it becomes quite confusing.
Cause yeah, that's deceptive, isn't it, to use that?
End line, awful.
Did it? On that note, I heard Glenn Murray on the radio talk, and he did it, because the first time he did it, I thought, have I misheard there? But he did it again. He described goal kicks as buy kicks. Have you ever heard that before?
Some people have pointed this out.
Yeah. I was like, is this a thing?
That's very like 1940s, isn't it?
Yeah, it was bizarre. And as I say, the first time I genuinely thought, I must have misheard that. And then he did it again. He's like, from, taking the time at buy kicks and this sort of thing.
Is it a regional thing? I don't think it will be. It just seems old-fashioned, but why would he then use it, Dave? It doesn't feel like a regional thing at all.
I don't even understand it. What's the...
I guess, because it's not even from the byline, is it, a goal kick? It's... A goal kick is further forward than that.
Yeah.
It's really weird, but, I'd be curious to know if it's just a Glenn Murrayism or whether, as you say, Adam, it's an old-school thing or a regional thing.
I don't like it, and...
A bye kick.
What a roundabout way of going about talking about goal kicks. Anyway. No For My Sins corner. This week, I've got something much more exciting for you because we haven't talked about Gary Weaver for a while, have we? Mm-hmm. It's gone off our radar a little bit, and I miss Gary Weaver. So I put together this from his recent output. Three levels for you to play. I'm going to play you three clips. I want you to shout out when you think he's going to say soil. When will Gary Weaver refer to somebody's home or away soil?
This is a big moment. Gary Weaver's getting his own corner, is he?
Quite right, too.
Okay.
Level one, this is Sheffield United versus Middlesbrough. Middlesbrough taking the lead at Bramall Lane.
So it's soil.
Soil's the word you're looking for.
And then it's Archer!
So just some entry-level Weaver there for you to enjoy, but no soiling.
No soil, okay.
No soiling. Right, let's move on to...
You've thrown a dummy in on the first one.
That is getting in our heads early.
You're setting the tone there.
Mm. I thought you were all just keeping your powder dry because I'd already outlined that it was three levels. I don't know. Let's go to level two of Weaver Watch.
And are we still looking for soil?
Of course you are.
Yeah.
It's a big night. What a night in the Steel City. When nerves are still were needed, Middlesbrough have held their nerve. There's still so much to do, but they tap Sheffield United on the shoulder and say, we are in this fight. Bramall Lane has fallen.
That is just a great, great clip. I'll tell you what, this isn't necessarily exclusive to Weaver, Charlie, as increasingly Weavery as that clip became. The bit at the start where he moved, it was quite sort of Tyler-esque, move from one concept to another, but while still referring to the one before. Let's hear it again, so we just get to understand what I'm talking about.
It's a big night. The Steel City.
Steel City.
When nerves are steel, we need it. Middlesbrough have held their nerve.
Held their nerve.
There's still so much to do, but they tap Sheffield United on the shoulder and say, we are in this fight.
I quite like that as well, because as he's commentating over the footage, Michael Carrick literally taps Sheffield United on the shoulder as he says it.
Which is more grey, arguably, than Tyler, that sort of imagined... Yeah. Conversation going on. That's incredible. Bramall Lane has fallen. I mean, we know he loves this kind of military language, but that is so brilliantly absurd.
That's the third film in that awful trilogy with Channing Tatum or somebody trying to say Bramall Lane.
Bramall Lane has been stormed.
Someone has kidnapped Billy Sharp. Right. You're still in the game. It's level three.
It's Romain Sawyer.
Soil.
Yes.
It's the best thing about this, and perhaps the whole reason that I engineered this entire one-off Gary Weaver corner, is that he just chucked it in at the end there, just almost like he'd forgotten to say it. corner, soil.
Their castle.
Fantastic.
I mean, this is a departure, isn't it? Because this is a home team scoring, and he's talking more about the sort of defence element. Normally, he is more interested in the storming of the planting the flag on enemy turf, whereas this is kind of defending your own fortress.
It's about as Gary Weaver as you could get, Dave, without actually uttering the immortal words of planting the flag. What a great showcase. I'm so glad he's bounced back and he's back in top form. Back to winning ways, back to weavering ways.
Has he ever done a planting flag on their own soil, or have they all been on enemy turf?
All been away, yeah. Way plantings. This is just amazing. I mean, I don't. You know, we've talked before, Charlie, about random Premier League players' names who pop up in pop songs, tenuously or otherwise. This is a whole new level. Adam Herdman was watching season 2, episode 3 of Frasier, in which the man himself enlists the help of Roz to find Daphne a date. So I'm guessing, what is this, early 90s,
early
late
90s
80s?
It would be, yeah.
Right, okay. That's just wonderful. Let's just hear it.
Sven Bachmann, he's an aerobics instructor.
I don't think so.
That is incredible.
Why is it so funny?
Oh, that is amazing. I mean, that's just so bizarre on so many levels.
Let's rinse as much enjoyment as we can out of that before the internet pedants, the Frasier heads, the script Googlers write in and confirm that is, in fact, Sven Bachmann. But I don't care.
Doesn't matter.
Because the way it was delivered, nobody will ever know. Sven Bachmann, star of Frasier, season 2.
I would have seen that at some point and heard that and never, obviously, you know, years before would have registered.
The crowning glory of this was the original clip that Adam Herdman tweeted. He was watching season 2, episode 3 of Frasier on a wall projector. What a cool way to watch Frasier.
On the Channel 4 reruns? Or
I don't know, maybe he had it on DVD. Who knows?
Great show. I mean,
yeah, fair play. Great stuff, though. Really enjoyed it. As did I this. This came from Franny. He was watching Love Island last week. And his question here is this a recoupling or has he just signed for a struggling Prem side?
How are you feeling right now?
To be honest, just excited to be here. And obviously, the work starts now, obviously.
Time for talking's over.
Yeah. Just looking forward to getting started.
Yeah.
Now listen, I'm just here to focus on doing bits.
Fantastic. Yeah, the grafting starts here. Brilliant. In what is now a weekly occurrence on the Football Clichés podcast, we must take issue with a claim made by Danny Baker, who has fervently disagreed with the BBC headline Celtic stay 9 points clear with Aberdeen rout after Celtic beat Aberdeen 4-0. Baker says, Charlie, 4-0 is not a rout. Routs begin at 6-0. Pay attention, teenage headline writers. This stuff is important. Wow. I disagree.
Yeah, I think rout could be 4. I mean, 5-1 feels like more of a rout than 4-0. I would say that. But I think 4-0... I remember so vividly the first time I ever heard that word, rout, in commentary. And then I think it was going from about 4-5 or maybe 5-6. And it was something like, it's not just a rout, it's a massacre now. Which was sort of explaining that differential. I think rout's okay for 4-0. And it is borderline.
5-0's certainly safe, Dave.
5-0's definitely a rout.
Yeah. But I think you're right, Charlie, to reference it like that, because I think often you would hear rout at the moment of transition from one thing to another.
Yes.
This is a rout.
Yeah,
it's very much used as a kind of linking term from one goal to another. It's a rout now, it's become a rout.
Or could it be also like if you're 3-0 down early on, this is in danger of becoming a rout.
Mm. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah, I mean, that you could argue that there's a certain conditions in which that fourth goal goes in for it to become a rout. I mean, it can be too early, too late. And if it's scored in, like, injury time, Charlie, to round things off, you wouldn't call it a rout then, would you?
What about the Brentford Man United game earlier in the season when they scored their fourth?
That's a rout.
I think that's a rout. Yeah.
Maybe it's too early. It can be too early to be a rout, maybe.
Yeah, but I think
were they falling up at half-time?
They were falling up at half-time, yeah.
Yeah, they were, weren't they?
Yeah.
It's a rout.
United being routed at.
You don't hear the verb too often, do you?
No.
Routing.
Suffer routing.
Yeah. People might think it's routing. Yeah. Mm. difficult. But yeah, Baker, off beam once again. Elsewhere in Scotland, Dave, the BBC tweeted, Dundee United remain bottom of the Scottish Premiership after a grotesque Mark Birigitti mistake gifted St Johnstone victory at Tannadice. Grotesque? You don't hear that very often.
A grotesque mistake.
What did he do? Sort of tear his own head off. Ripped off his hands and then couldn't save the shot.
That is harsh. Grotesque error.
To give you a bit of context, Charlie, he received the ball near his own goal line, dithered a bit, someone just slide tackled him and the ball into the goal. So there's an element of of violence about it, I guess, but it was still fundamentally comical error rather than anything else. But I don't think that's what they're referring to.
No, I think that I could only imagine the grotesqueness being so triggering for like a proper football man that it's something like that, like a goalkeeper showboating or trying to play out.
It's
like
grotesque, Andy.
Yeah, like that is just disgusting. Just clear your lines.
But Dave, I know football is often guilty of using sort of overblown language for fairly mundane
criminal
things,
for
like
instance.
Yeah, criminal or disaster or something like that. But grotesque, whilst being excessive, it just, in a weird way, it's excessive. It doesn't feel distasteful. It's just like, why would you use that word? That's just weird. The more I look at it, the more weird it just seems.
Yeah. Well, it speaks to some sort of spectacle, sort of some sort of ugly spectacle, doesn't it? Grotesqueness.
Yeah.
Which I don't think is fitting for a game that was at Tannadice.
No.
I mean, you could, when talking about like a run of form or something, you know, like you talk about like horrific, which again, when you actually think about it, is a bit over the top. But I think it would be okay to say that they come in here on a horrific run of form.
Yeah. Yeah, you would use it sparingly, for sure.
I think a more appropriate usage of the word grotesque would be if you were of the mind to critique Chelsea's
spending. Bang on.
In the transfer.
Oh, I see.
This is grotesque.
It's a cost of living crisis out there. Yeah. This is grotesque.
Yeah, turning it into a real kind of taste issue. Yeah, for sure. But yeah, you couldn't use that for a goalkeeping error. Now, Mike Hull 84 writes, he was watching Match of the Day, Nottingham Forest against Manchester City, and Keylor Navas stopping a header from Aymeric Laporte. Let's hear the commentary clip.
In from De Bruyne. Oh, free header! What a save from Navas! How on earth did he keep that out from Laporte? Clipped in by De Bruyne, nobody picking up Laporte. His header was motoring towards goal, but Navas got something in the way and something that may well have caused him a fair bit of pain.
Mike asks, Charlie, we need an adjudication on this usage. I'm not at all comfortable that a header can motor. I agree. I don't think headers can motor. What can motor?
Motoring towards goal.
Yeah, a player.
A player,
like
running. So running. Yeah.
But can the ball ever motor?
That was motoring. No, that was travelling. Yeah. But there's a lot. Hold on. There's a lot to unpack here. I thought that was we were going to be discussing the sort of language around a goalkeeper being hit in the ball sort of thing.
Oh,
and
right.
Also, because you played a longer clip there. The Forest fans are singing "You're just a shit" something to Kevin De Bruyne. I think they're singing "You're just a shit" Jack Colback. Just on the topic of "You're just a shit." And that is,
that's peak irony, isn't it?
That's textbook, I think. Yeah,
right.
As a ginger player, we've got a ginger player, we're going to compare you to him in a kind of quite funny way.
I'm glad you picked that out, because I couldn't work out what they were singing.
I think that's what it is.
Back to the issue at hand, Dave. This is a slam dunk for us. Headers can't motor. The ball certainly can't motor. BBC commentator Mark Scott is in some trouble here.
If it was going to motor, it would require more of a distance to travel as well, I think. He's headed that at the keeper from 2 yards away.
Also, motoring doesn't even really imply it's going that quickly. It just says it sort of says it's just going. It's just going from A to B. It doesn't have to be going that quickly. But anyway, the upshot of all of this is that Mark Scott is a regular listener to the Football Clichés podcast, and I gave him right of reply, an unprecedented scenes of democracy on the Football Clichés podcast.
I would argue that motoring, in a commentary sense, is used to depict something travelling at high velocity. For example, I don't think it would be too outlandish to hear the term Kyle Walker motoring forwards on the overlap. I appreciate that it's not really used to describe the trajectory of the ball too often, but I don't think it's too ridiculous. I think maybe as well there was the need for a bit of elegant variation. I'd used powered, I think. Certainly I'd used travelling to describe a ball going really quickly towards goal. But I will, of course, respectfully take on board whatever the adjudication panel decides on. But I would throw it back at you. Give me some other terms that you could use to describe that type of header from Laporte. And yeah, I'll wait to see what you guys come up with.
fair enough.
Slightly combative tone at the end there from Mark Scott. I'll see what you guys can do then.
No, fine.
No, fair enough.
Would
you
be
come,
fine.
You come down to Selhurst next week and give it a go yourself.
No. I fully accept I would be shit at football commentary. That's not the point here. I would
and Mark
accept
Scott is a lovely bloke as well.
Yeah, he is a lovely bloke. He is a lovely bloke. And he played ball with this. But Poward would have been fine, Charlie.
Yeah, I mean, I guess though that's, you know, useful to have that context if you felt he'd done Powered already. I mean, it was interesting though, the overlaps, the Wieser, because, you know, I talked about the player motoring towards goal, which he said as well, the travelling thing that we both said.
Fired.
Can you fire a header?
I don't know, you could have a bullet header, but he's describing the ball. Yeah,
the ball is the bullet, but the act of firing requires a little bit of drawing back of the hammer in the gun, which you don't really do with headers, but you could do. Can you fire a header? I've never really considered this.
No, I don't think so.
Fire a shot, and a header isn't, strictly speaking,
shows
a shot,
the difficulty, because without, you know, Powered is the one there.
No, but it's wrong in at least two ways, Mark Scott. That's all I'm saying. But please keep on listening to our lovely podcast.
Ian Irving here, host of the world's biggest Manchester United podcast, Talk of the Devils, brought to you by The Athletic, of course. It's the most exciting week of football for the club in years, with another league victory teeing up the Barcelona second leg and the League Cup final on Sunday. So make sure you join me, Andy Mitten, Laurie Whitwell and Carl Anker for this week's episodes. There's Takeover Talk in there, of course, too. Just search for Talk of the Devils on Apple Podcasts, Spotify or wherever else you get your podcasts.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Oh, look at that! That is wonderful!
Brought to your ears by The Athletic. This is Football Clichés.
Next, this is the most heartwarming story of the footballing weekend, Dave. Ollie Swift of Walsall tweeted, Alan Kerbishley, of all people, found my wallet on the tube in London and sent it to Bescott. What a bloke. And there's a picture of the note that Alan Kerbishley enclosed with his wallet. Dear Oliver, hope this finds you well. I found your wallet on a tube in London. Hopefully it has not caused you too much stress. Now you can get in to see your team. Best wishes. Awesome footballer's autograph underneath. Job done. That's brilliant. What? I mean, that's classy touch,
that
Dave.
That is. That's pure class.
That's superb. A handwritten note. You've got the signature at the bottom there. Hmm. Did he print his name underneath? How did he work out that was Alan Kirby?
This is the thing. I don't know.
The signature.
I don't know.
Could he match it up on his Wikipedia page? They often have famous people's.
But how would he know who to check?
He does not have his signature on his Wikipedia page.
Oh, you mean
page.
How would he know? Yeah.
Yeah, he's not famous enough to have his signature on his Wikipedia page, but I did Google it just to make sure it checks. But what I can't figure out is how Ollie Swift knew to check. Even
that it was Alan Kerbishley. Was there anything
The photo on Alan Kerbishley's Wikipedia page, though, I'll share my screen. It does look like, and I kid you not, that he is signing an autograph.
Yeah, it does look it up as well.
I've looked at this one before. It looks like he's in prison and he's just about to be released.
That as well. In prison signing an autograph.
Yeah. let's look past this oddly pedantic point of how Ollie Swift found out it was Alan Kerbishley. Alan Kerbishley may have printed his name elsewhere in the notes. I mean, maybe he wrote it on the back of the envelope, like return address. I don't know.
He's got a seal. In the Kirbishley Royal Seal.
Oh, hang on. He sent a whole wallet, let's not forget. So he probably sent it at recorded delivery, so he'll know who it came from, right? He'll know the sender.
Is that how it works?
You don't just post a wallet, do you?
Special delivery. But I don't know if you'd want to necessarily give that information away.
Here from a Mr. Kirbishley for you, sir.
Telegram from Mr. Kirbishley.
Maybe he sent it up in like a car or something like that. Sent his car up, sent his driver up. I don't know. Quite the upshot of all of this is Chris tweeted in, Charlie, and says, which manager would you least like to see find your wallet?
Ooh, that is a great question.
How can we do this and not get the lawyers involved?
Yeah, I mean, so what, you mean for fear that they would like hold on to it and you'd never see it again?
Daishi would be a bit annoying if he'd found your wallet, wouldn't he? He'd prank you and something. He'd get out all your cards and take the piss out of your picture in all of them before giving you your wallet.
The driving license,
Take a while.
Is that you?
Yeah.
Similarly, Richard Cordron asks Dave, doesn't Kerb seem just like the most likely manager to go out of his way to return a lost wallet? I'd back Steve Cooper from the current crop. Well, what is this based on? Eddie Howe would return your wallet.
Oh, no, would he? No, I think he'd get Jason Tindall to do it for him.
And you'd get into a scrap with Jason Tindall.
Tindall would take a fiver out, I think. I don't know why.
Steve Cooper is a great
shout. For you. I'll return your wallet. What do I get?
I think it needs to be someone who, yeah, there are like tales of their kindness in the community. And I can imagine, you know, in the long read about the team that has a good season or stays up or whatever, who's most likely to have and he endeared himself to locals by helping out at X event. I think Steve Cooper is right up there.
Good.
Thomas Frank would return it, meet you for a drink, talk to you about tactics, and just you'd have a lovely time. He'd I think be my favourite.
Good to see Alan Kirbishley making up for when he vandalised that window in Quadrophenia. Anyway. Right, next up, two curious examples here of referees basically getting in on the act, being talked about as if they were players and talking like they were players. First up, this came from Charlie Jones, who was listening to Mark Clattenburg, who was the latest guest on Sam Allardyce's podcast, No Tippy Tappy Football, which we haven't dug into yet, and I don't think we're going to. Anyway, here's Clats talking about Pierluigi Collina.
The email I got off Collina after the match, you made us cry. And I'm thinking, my career's over here. The email was so damning. 2 weeks later, he gives us a big match. I wanted to die for him. He didn't speak to us during that 2 weeks, but an appointment came through for a Champions League game, and I ran 150%. I wanted to die for him on the pitch. That performance, because he got a reaction out of us. You know, if he didn't give us a game for 5-6 weeks, I would have had the hump on. But he actually gave us a game, and I wanted to die for him. So that style of man management worked, but it doesn't work for everybody.
Class, Charlie. All I was waiting for was brick walls there.
Yeah.
I actually, my favourite thing might be...
I would have booked a brick wall for him.
I love Allardyce's interjections there. Correct, was my favourite.
It's that Andy Gray school of...
It's very Andy Gray. It's
co-podcasting.
It just sounds so unimpressive.
Should just talk over him like I do. Come on, Sam, it's your podcast, mate. Dave, this is good, right? I mean, it's the sort of thing you would expect from Klatz, this sort of emotive refereeing language, right?
Yeah, I'd never considered that dynamic before. I'd never really considered that referees are...
They are managed by
Mike Dean, Howard Webb, Collina, whatever. They've got someone to impress.
I felt 10 feet tall.
Felt I could pick up on any offence.
Next up, this came from Kieran Lawrence, who was watching BT Sport on Saturday. This is Peter Walton picking apart some Villa Arsenal handbags.
I think Simon Hooper is doing the right thing, as you said, just letting the players just see themselves out, self-discipline. He'll end up probably here with a caution, just to let the players know he's there. But other than that, I don't think it's much more.
The reducer from Simon Hooper, Charlie, just letting them know he's there.
It's a good combo, because he's also letting them, what did he say, like,
see themselves out.
See themselves out, yeah.
Yeah.
Just like, yeah, just see it out. Just see this little ruckus out.
All actually quite good sort of logic, Dave. I feel like that's exactly how a referee should go about their business. Just literally let this pathetic piece of pushing and shoving fizzle out and then deal with it. That's probably what they're taught, and probably quite rightly.
Yeah.
That is an interesting concept, though, the idea of a ref letting the players know they're there with the... I don't know.
Have an early refereeing reducer, can't you? Like an early yellow card that sort of lays down the law. But co-commentators are pretty undecided about that, aren't they, Charlie? Like, he's gone too early.
I think the best thing there would be like a cut it out. He's told him one more and then he's booked. Because I think, yeah, an early booking could be like, he set himself a precedent there. And he sort of, you know, could get out of hand.
Whilst we're talking about matters at Villa Park, given the manner and the context in which Arsenal won that game, Charlie, it made me think of one of the more confident pundit lines that you hear, where they say, Arsenal, you know, last season they lose that game.
Yeah.
And it was such a last season they lose that game game.
I'm such a huge fan of that, just because it's so often wrong. I mean, as it happens, Arsenal won this game narrowly last season as well, 1-0. But yeah, it's such a go-to. You used to hear that so often with Wenger's Arsenal, actually.
Yeah.
And Wenger's Arsenal, you know, who even when they were terrible, in inverted commas, were still coming like fourth. And to come fourth, you've got to win a lot of games. But whenever they'd win a narrow away game, like, yeah, last season they lose that. Maybe draw. Certainly aren't winning it.
Lovely use of the present tense as well. They lose that game. Yeah. It's just such a football-y thing to do. Right, next up. Now, Dave, bear with me on this one. This came from Michael Wheeler. I presume he wasn't watching this on an overhead projector on his brick wall, but let's see. He says, I was watching an old episode of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? And one of the questions was, in which sport do they refer to the playing area as the park? The choices were football, lacrosse, cricket or polo. I instinctively said football, which was ultimately the right answer. But I did quickly second guess myself when I tried to think about the last time I'd heard it in a football context. The contestant didn't know. The audience were equally split between the answers. And his phone a friend didn't know. But Chris Tarrant acted like it was really obvious and everyone should have known it was football. However, I'm now full of doubt about the whole park question. Do we say park that much for this to have been an easy question to answer? When do we say park? Dave, what's your thoughts here? When would you use the word park? Because I don't think I think it's more of a Scottish thing than English, but it is used in certain contexts.
I'm having a similar moment to Michael here. I can't think of how it would be used in context outside of a stadium name out there on the park.
I remember we
played them off the park first.
Yeah. Played them off the park. Yeah.
I remember one of my early memories of it, someone at school being told by a teacher, you're the quickest player on the park.
Ooh.
In a sort of like, take him on. Like, you're the quickest player on the park. But it's not, I mean, it's way too colloquial and not enough of a thing for that to be an objective answer on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. Yeah,
really weird. No indication of what level this was. I'm guessing, what, I don't know, 2,000, 4,000. You reckon as far as 16?
Well, maybe not if they think it's that easy, but I think that is. And well, the only reason I say 16 is if the audience were divided. The audience generally are pretty good up until about certainly 2 or 4.
And he was using all three lifelines on this as well.
I don't think I would have chosen football. Well, I think I would have gone for lacrosse or polo. Yeah,
I don't blame you.
Yeah,
at all.
I think it is like a little knowledge is a dangerous thing, because I think you'd be like, well, I know football really well and I don't think it's football. So it must be that it's a lacrosse. Yeah, it's a sport I'm not aware of.
Above all else, though, Charlie, as you've already implied, I would just be furious at the question before I even attempted to answer. What the fuck is this shit? This is rubbish. This isn't knowledge. This is just interpretation. This is absolutely a joke. But, you know, from our perspective, let's address this point. Dave, I think park is generally interchangeable with pitch, but I do like we played them off the park. I think that is the more dominant form. We played them off the pitch. I don't think people say that.
No.
Played them off the park. But other than that, I can't think of a dominant usage, certainly in England.
No, unless you're saying, like, it's been a walk in the park.
No.
Which you could say in lacrosse, presumably, or polo, or any sport.
What about, Charlie, this is one of the examples that Michael Wheeler offers us. He says, plenty of space in the middle of the park. Middle of the pitch. Mm. You'd still say middle of the pitch. Middle of the park. Yeah. I like park being used for pitch. I think it's kind of cool. It is colloquial, like you say, but I like it. It's got a bit of character about it. But anyway,
I mean, it's a rugby thing as well as football. I know rugby's not an option there, but which suggests it might be in other sports.
Anyway, Michael Wheeler signs off, Dave. It's my contention that Tarrant is talking shit. And this was actually a sneaky, hard question, even for a football fan, because it's not used enough in football to make you absolutely sure it isn't more prevalent in one of those other sports. Exactly as you said. Do you know what, Dave? This is like a quiz machine Who Wants to Be a Millionaire question rather than the TV show one. Like, a real kind of stealing your quid moment.
Well, I like the inference there that Chris Tarrant is setting the questions.
There was a lot made of that scandal. The Who Wants to Be a Millionaire scandal with Major Ingram and the cough and all that. This is this needs to be investigated. There needs to be an ITV drama recreation of this moment and how it was allowed to pass muster.
Well, if you're feeling, you know, conspiracy theory minded at the moment, I asked Michael Wheeler what series, what episode was this, so we can get the clip and decipher ourselves how it was delivered and that sort of thing. And he says he didn't know. And he went back through TV listings and there's no record of it. Like, this was on Challenge TV, Charlie. All the other series have their episodes and series numbers applied. And, I, you know, as a guy who used to work in TV listings, I know my shit here. I went to several sources and there's no indication of what episodes are. They're trying to bury
it. It's been struck from the record. Though it would be odd if that were the case for them to broadcast it. we have to put it out there, but we're just not going to list it.
Yeah. Because there might be a podcast out there that's trying to dig it up, but they can't find it. It is a disgrace, Dave. I mean, that's our conclusion here.
Yeah.
I'm glad we had a little bit of cliches debate in there in the middle there too. So fun for everybody. Right, next up, I tweeted about this on Sunday evening. QPR's tweet about the departure of Neil Critchley as manager, Dave, contained a little curly arrow just to emphasise that he was departing the R's.
Yeah.
It's too frivolous, too flippant, too playful.
It's a man's job we're talking about here.
Yeah.
Livelihood.
And his assistants, Ian Brunskill and Mike Garrity, who sound like linesmen, Charlie, by the way. Mike Garrity is the most linesman-y coach name I've ever heard. No wonder he got sacked.
Mike, yeah, he's pursuing a career in linesmaning.
Yeah.
I mean, what's next? Like a sort of sad face or something? Or like a P45 emoji?
Like people who tweet their condolences to people with an
exclamation mark. Extraordinary. I mean, that is a big footballery thing as well. Like,
so sorry for your loss.
All right.
Awful news.
There'll be like three separate things. Like, what are you doing?
It's true.
That is an epidemic in football. Absolutely absurd.
On a tangent from this, the BBC sort of background story on this had a section titled Decline and Fall at Loftus Road. Rangers were top of the Championship on 22nd of October, having picked up 30 points from their first 16 league games of the campaign. However, a loss of form, which began just before Michael Beale's departure for Glasgow outfit Rangers in late November, has seen the club slip down the table. Now, Charlie, I included this because I was so disgusted about the phrasing of Glasgow outfit Rangers. And then it only dawned on me that we're talking about Queen's Park Rangers. They needed to clarify. Of course they did. But Glasgow outfit Rangers? No. No way.
But you just get rid of the outfit.
Yeah, I was going to say, surely Glasgow Rangers would suffice.
A lot of the purists don't like Glasgow Rangers.
Is that a thing?
It's very 80s, 90s thing, Glasgow Rangers, and to a lesser extent, Glasgow Celtic. But you very rarely hear it now. But I think in Europe, they kind of use it a bit more, Glasgow Rangers. Actual Rangers fans despise it, as I understand it.
I mean, it's very easy to fall foul of traditions with the old firm, as we found to our dismay in the Dublin live show when we put a picture of Ali McCoist up on the screen.
Yeah, the nicest man in football.
And we couldn't work out why we were being booed.
It's Ali McCoist.
Yeah, the most safe person. I mean, presumably there wouldn't be a ton of Rangers, Glasgow Rangers fans reading this press release, but I guess you can't be too careful.
True. Also, it dawned on me, Charlie, that, you know, if someone somewhere enforced a name change upon Rangers and said, right, I'm sorry, you know, it's too much confusion, you've got to be called Glasgow Rangers, just how dramatic an effect that is on that name. It's like a completely different club name. Glasgow Rangers is mad.
Yeah.
It's like a Sunday league team.
Yeah, it does. I mean, I think that same with Glasgow Celtic. I can see why they resist. It's very small time.
Uncharted waters for us now, Dave, as we head over to North Korea. There was a game at the weekend, or at some point, attended by all the top brass of the North Korean outfit. And it was the Cabinet Office versus the Ministry of Defence at the KPA Stadium in Pyongyang. I want to read you some excerpts from the match report, the official match report from this game. The game was always exciting. In the first half of the game, the player number 12 of the team of the Ministry of National Defence scored the first goal by shooting in the goal area. They need some work over there, don't they?
Is this AI Alan Smith doing the match report?
He's been commandeered for North Korean football coverage. Straight to the point, though, isn't it, Dave? No mucking about.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's very much their stock trade, isn't it?
Presumably, Charlie, they can't give the players' names out for the Ministry of National Defence because it's a security issue.
It's very 1984, which obviously makes sense. But, I mean, maybe there's a tight word count that the
the reporter was given here. And he's,
that's true. Yeah, you try writing a 300-word match report to the whistle.
Yeah, on the whistle.
On the whistle, the Pyongyang Times or whatever. But, you know, I know the tone suggests a quite sober atmosphere, Dave, but it's not like they don't know how to have fun. During the interval, model plane operators of the Pyongyang Air Club made high-tech flight of different model aircraft to delight the spectators. Great stuff. Halftime nice. Entertainment.
Yeah.
Better than the Sky Strikers cheerleaders of the early 90s.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you'd half expect them to sort of parade a ballistic missile on the pitch at halftime or something, wouldn't you, really? Yeah, but yeah. Right.
Charlie, this next paragraph disappointed me somewhat. I thought I might have some, you know, comrades over there in this particular field. It says, in the second half, the number 22 player of the cabinet team scored a goal for an 11-metre free kick at around 55 minutes of the match. So the match got more exciting as each team got 1 point. Now, that is obviously an absolute car crash in football leagues, but so close to being cometh the hour. Come on, lads, help me out.
I think if this had used cometh the hour for a 60th minute goal, then you might finally be clawing back credibility.
I would have defected. Yeah. I would have gone.
I think, yeah, you would be like, as the moment it left your foot, you'd be off. You might drop. I'm out of here.
I would have been Dennis Rodman. They would have welcomed me with open arms. Every player ran and ran with a tireless ambition for victory and showed fine scenes. Dave, this is proper North Korea language, isn't it? Kind of the struggle for the greater good, isn't it?
And showed fine scenes. Yeah, good.
No limbs in the crowd, unfortunately. Anyway, the Ministry of National Defence team won 3-1. In the match, Charlie. Then there was a tug of war match between staff members of the Cabinet and Ministry of National Defence. Cool stuff.
Really? What, the same players?
Other staff, I think it kind of implies.
Okay. Yeah. Get the big lads on.
And the Ministry beat its Cabinet rival 2-0 in the tug of war. 2-0.
Love.
Is it love in tug of war, is it? Yeah, well, fair enough.
Famously love, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, an interesting window into how the North Koreans do this. Charlie, any tips for them? Any tips for their sports writers? Just mix it up a bit.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the more elegant variation, I suppose. I mean, you would be raging if you were, I mean, I suppose this goes with the territory, but if you did have your moment and you were that number 12 and you'd scored or whatever, to not be named would be really annoying.
I quite like 11-metre free kick for penalty, Dave. That's going right in there at least number 4 in my elegant variation for penalties.
Oh, God.
Get rid of spot kick. That's boring.
Just sneak it in. Just sneak it into an Athletic article next week. No one will notice.
So somebody's changed my... Nah, don't worry. It's fine. North Koreans do it. It's all right. But anyway, speaking of infamous dictators operating over there in the Eastern Hemisphere, it's time for Keys and Grey Corner.
Sunday. That's basically the whole reason we did that section, isn't it?
Yeah, it was. What a great segue that was, by the way.
In one of Alan Partridge's books, he does an amazing bit like that on Richard Keys.
Oh, great to be in good company. Yeah. A couple of clips for you from Keys' world. As is his wont, he's probably publishing his blog as we record, just to be a right pain in the arse. But anyway, here's Keezy on Chelsea's hopes for the top four. It kind of flips round the dynamic a little bit, this one, Charlie. This is Andy Gray dismissing everything Keezy's got to say.
I think that Everton have got more chance of making the top four than Chelsea. Richard, there's no chance of them making the top four. Not a cat and nails chance.
With a different manager?
Not even with a different manager, Jace, because they can't buy any players. And who's going to score goals for them?
Well, they don't need to buy any players. They've got good players. They've just got a coach that doesn't...
Well, who's the goal scorer?
Rather, let's say, hasn't worked out how to use them.
Who's going to get a goal for them?
Well, you end up playing like Manchester City did last year and you share goals about around...
My point is, yes, who?
Well, you've got Fernandes in there who can score goals. You've Raheem Sterling's at the club who knows how to score goals and did for Manchester City.
Hasn't.
Kai Havertz can score goals.
No, they can't. They're not getting top four.
You've bought players all over them.
But you're assuming they're going to get a new coach in?
I'm not assuming anything. I'm asking you what your thoughts are.
Well, I don't think the chances are great.
Just a combination there, Charlie, of sort of pub debate, a genuinely sort of pub conversation level debate, and also Gray fighting back a bit, dismissing what Keezy's got to say. Good stuff. Good to see.
I mean, Keezy quite progressive there, to be fair, you know, invoking Man City playing without a striker, which he obviously would have hated at the time and before it proved to be a big success. Can you imagine when they were going into that season? No striker, Andy. But yeah, it is a funny role reversal.
Good to see you. Keezy suggesting that Enzo Fernandez is the answer to Chelsea's goal scoring problem.
That was a slightly odd one, yeah.
They spent £100 million on him. He's got a few goals in him, hasn't he? Instead, he's done nothing. Next up, this is Keezy on Richarlison, which I think was the point on Sunday afternoon where Andy Gray and Jason McAteer had simply run out of energy to react to his hot takes.
Richarlison, 15 appearances for Tottenham, no league goals. Mm-hmm. That's not much of a return for 50 million, is it?
Well, we did say about Richarlison.
Whatever you feel is,
well,
is the case.
Frustrated the life out of me when he was at Everton because...
When they get to the point where they just go, yeah, all right, mate. Bit much. It continues to annoy me that I know for a fact, as we reach the end of this recording, Charlie, that Keezy's hitting publish on his little blog and we're going to miss out on all of it. I bet it's out there. I'm not even going to check now because I don't really want to do it to myself, but it'll be out there. What are we talking about this week? What are you guessing? What are you predicting that it's going to be?
A Daishi, the Everton revival. I think Mike, I don't think it'll be the main topic. I think it could
I
be
think
like
Potter a... Potter would be top.
Yeah, Potter would be top.
I think Potter's the top item.
But I think, you know, he then, without any sort of line break or any... language to sort of tell you that he's changed subject, just complete non sequitur, will be like, and how great is it to see Daishi doing such a good job at Everton? See,
I was going to say, who's going to be this week's what a great job he's doing down there? Do you think it's Daishi?
I think
Cooper
could be Cooper, and then could be a sort of like a Nottingham. We need to have Nottingham Forest in the Premier League. It's a proper footballing city.
Who's getting this week's sort of really pompous Keezy wake-up call, Dave, like, you know, putting them back in their box?
Do you know what it
Brighton
could be?
Drew.
It could be Palace in like that sleepwalking towards relegation. Do something now, Steve Parrish.
Is he pro Moisey? What about West Ham?
I assume he's pro Moisey.
He must be pro Moise.
You'd have thought so.
Great football man.
I was also thinking Erik ten Hag must be close to his 10-month anniversary by now.
Eric, 10 months. Ten Hag.
That's a good point. Let's find out when he was hired.
He started the job in May, didn't he?
When it was announced. He was announced quite early.
But he was there like at the last game of last season in a sort of unofficial capacity. So if we're going with May, then March is his 10-month.
21st of April, I can tell you.
So that's when he was... That was when it was announced.
That's when he was announced.
So that is...
Well, that's...
Today! Oh my God! Today! You made it, Eric! Absolutely superb! 10 months to the day! Keezy in the mud! What an absolutely sensational moment for the Football Clichés podcast.
That's unbelievable.
Ah, superb.
The cogs turning.
Somebody tell Keezy, quick.
Always a great moment when we struggle with the dynamic of recording on Monday and the podcast being released on Tuesday. Good fun, isn't it?
I mean, as you listen. But
yeah,
even
absolutely
better.
Tremendous, tremendous stuff for Keezy and Grey Corner. Thanks to you, David Walker.
Thank you.
Thanks to you, Charlie Eccleshare.
Thank you. What an ending.
Yeah. Thanks everyone for listening. If you made it this far, we'll be back on Thursday. Cheers.
The Athletic.